First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Jacksonville doctors on the front lines of fighting COVID say the end is nowhere in sight. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a safe and happy weekend. Just ahead, the grim view inside Jacksonville hospitals as we speak with one doctor leading the way in trying to save patients. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, JU is responding to the nursing shortage in Florida. We'll tell you how. But first, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Florida continues to set records we don't want for COVID infections and hospitalizations. Federal agencies reporting that in Florida, an additional 25,991 people tested positive over the weekend for COVID. 16,000 in this state were hospitalized. 27 new deaths in Florida over the weekend. The death toll now stands at 40,584 in the Sunshine State since the pandemic began in March of 2020. So the positivity rate is high, and it remains high. Unvaccinated people between the ages of 12 and 49 account for nearly 90% of the new cases in Florida this week. Kids under 12 who are not yet eligible for the vaccines account for just over 20% of new COVID cases. So we want to get a snapshot of where things stand right now. We're pleased to welcome back to the show Dr. Jennifer Coward, a hospitalist physician in Jacksonville and part of the group Doctors Fighting COVID. She's on the line. Dr. Coward, good morning.
Good morning.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. So tell us about the situation inside local hospitals right now.
Yes. We have seen a small downtick in numbers in the past couple days, our case count going down just a little bit, but we are still riding the wave in the hospitals in terms of very sick patients still coming in every day to be admitted. And people who have COVID-19 who require hospitalization, many of them stay in the hospital for a long time, you know, days to weeks. So we still have patients hospitalized now, you know, here August 16th, who have been there since early or mid-July. And so every patient that's in the hospital for a long period of time, you know, several weeks, that is taking, you know, we have to use a lot of resources to take care of those people. And so as more people are coming in, there's fewer and fewer places to put them. So all of our hospitals in the area are putting patients into less orthodox places, right? You know, so these, you've seen pictures of the units at some hospitals where they had to open space in, you know, like their unoccupied floors that normally would be used for HVAC equipment. You know, now they have beds in there. Other places are putting patients in the peri-op care areas where normally we would only have patients for a few hours in the post-op setting after surgery. And now we have patients who are in there for days to weeks at a time in small rooms that don't have the usual luxuries of a television or a private bathroom. So still definitely dealing with very high case counts, very sick patients in the hospital, and not at all back to normal yet.
Yeah. Can you explain, Dr. Coward, why this affects us all? For people who are just following this casually and they don't think they're going to get sick or that anyone they know is going to get sick, when there are this many COVID patients straining our hospital system, that means that other types of patients are not going to always get the best of care. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, and that's one of the, there's so many heartbreaking things about this. I don't want anybody sick in my hospital with COVID, but I also have to try to give people advice on how to time surgery that is urgent to them, but is schedulable. So I will use a personal example. My dad has a kidney stone. and he needs to get it taken care of. He only has one kidney. And so his doctor said, well, it's fairly urgent that you get this taken care of so that we can save your kidney. But we're at a setting where elective surgeries are being canceled across the city and, in fact, across the country because of a lack of inpatient beds. So, you know, if his surgery only needed to be taken care of in the clinic setting, in the outpatient setting, perhaps he could get it done. Most of the hospitals are still able to do surgeries if you don't require hospitalization. But if he gets sick after the surgery, if he has an infection, which he's had before, then he's sitting in the emergency room at one of the hospitals for hours and hours, sometimes days, because of the overcrowding right now, and being coughed upon by everybody in there with COVID. And so we're having to try to give him advice on not only should he have the kidney stone taken care of, but what timing, and can he wait a little bit longer? Because right now there's not a bed for him at most hospitals. And again, across the country, this is not unique to Jacksonville. So I'm seeing cases where patients in the state of Florida who need advanced care like ECMO, there are no more ECMO beds in the state of Florida, and they're calling for transfer across the country. And across the country, we're running out of the ability to provide these extra services. So ECMO is not just used for COVID cases. It's used for transplants. It's used for heart care for people who have advanced heart problems, who may be needing advanced equipment or even a heart transplant. And so we're running out of those advanced services across the country and here in Jacksonville, so that even if you don't have COVID, even if COVID is not affecting you personally right now as far as the infection itself, it is impacting your ability to get other care.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll say is that we had to pull at my hospital, we had to pull a lot of doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners and PAs. We had to pull a lot of people from the clinics and from the surgical areas to come and help us deal with the influx of patients in the hospital. We were so grateful to have that help. But those are patients, those are doctors and clinicians who now cannot see those patients they would be seeing in the clinic.
In the clinic.
So people's appointments, appointments for other things are being canceled right now. And these are patients who have arranged their work life. They've saved money for appointments. They have insurance. They've waited sometimes months already for a certain specialty appointment. And now it's being canceled and put on hold. Because of the COVID surge.
Lots
of medical care.
Deferred. Mm-hmm. Let me just let folks know we're speaking to Dr. Jennifer Cowart of Doctors Fighting COVID. Call us now, 549-2937. And you mentioned the ECMO machine that bypasses the patient's lungs and heart. It essentially takes over the organ function of the patient. This is patients whose oxygen levels are just so low that their organs aren't working anymore. That's how bad things can get for some of these patients. And of course, we say it every day on this show, we'll say it again now, the solution to all of this, folks, is to go get vaccinated, please. Because Dr. Cowart, school started in Duval County last week, and it starts today in St. John's County. And there is a mask mandate in Duval, but with an opt-out, there is not one in St. John's. Nassau County, not a mandate for students in class. And no special mitigation protocols. What are your concerns about this new variable affecting the positive case count as the school year begins?
Yeah, I have two young kids, one who's 8 and one who's 4. And I'm very worried about this as far as, children being infected and then bringing it home to other vulnerable people. So, my daughter is at a school where they, the opt out is in place, and she tells me that a lot of kids are not wearing their masks. Now Duval County does have a requirement right now for staff, to wear their masks for 30 days while we assess everything that's happening. But we're going to see pockets where the kids are perhaps in clusters opted out by their parents. It's also extremely difficult for teachers to try to, enforce this. In the middle of the school day, are they going to be looking that up and seeing which kid has an opt-out and which kid doesn't? So it pushes a lot of burden on the parents. So I supported the opt-out as far as being better than, in my opinion, than a full optional. But at this point, having seen that the case counts in Duval have already risen by Friday to over 80 cases, which last year it took us well over a month before we were that high, I'm worried that the opt-out may not be enough. And so tomorrow, I believe there's a workshop at Duval County School Board, and I plan to attend and, you know, try to advocate for, can we go one step further in the basis of this very severe surge that we're in, and can we institute a total mask mandate with only a doctor's note being allowed to exclude, because we're seeing already the case counts go up. And that's in Duval, where we do have the opt-out in place and everyone else required to wear masks. So I know my friends and family going to school in St. John's this week are deeply concerned about masks being totally optional there. Many parents actually pulling their kids out of school temporarily because they're concerned about this surge right now. So there is a possibility that even though we're starting to see the case counts tick down overall in the city, if we get a big bloom of cases related to the schools, we could start to see that tick up. And of course, we have unfortunately lost a few teachers in the past week who are predominantly would have gotten sick before school started. But, you know, two teachers died last week and one died over the weekend. And my heart goes out to them and their families and all the kids who knew and loved them as well. We want to keep our teachers safe just as much as we want to keep our kids safe. And, you know, so I'm deeply concerned about that. I'm grateful that we have the dashboard in Duval County where we can see the cases at each individual school. I am curious in terms of data transparency about how many kids and staff are quarantined at any given school, because that's a big number as well that would help people make decisions. I'm also curious about data transparency for the charter schools. Last year and this year, the charters are not participating in the dashboard. So I think there's some things that we could continue to ask for in terms of data transparency as we move into this school year.
549-2937. Of course, Governor Ron DeSantis has banned districts from instituting the kinds of mask mandates you'd like to see, Dr. Cowart. There are already lawsuits filed around his position, one state, one federal. What did you think of the governor, meanwhile, coming to town the other day and setting up a clinic for patients who are positive for COVID to get a medication known as Regeneron? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I would love to see as much energy being put into promoting masks and the vaccine. And I'm grateful to our city leadership that put in place more testing sites, some of which are opening today. And trying to make sure that we have vaccine access across the city. That said, I think the Regeneron site is innovative and it does have some potential for helping our patients. So I would say that anybody who has a positive test for coronavirus, who has high risk for developing severe disease, if you have comorbidities or you're older and you get coronavirus, Regeneron and the monoclonal antibodies can be very helpful at keeping you from getting seriously ill. So a lot of our clinic sites across the city and our hospitals have those monoclonal antibodies. Also now this site opened up by the governor. And so I think it's an added tool in our toolkit. I'm happy that we have it, and I would like to see the preventative measures being promoted as much as well, so the vaccine and the mask. But if you do get sick, you need to be tested and you need to, you know, consider going to get those monoclonal antibodies if you have risk factors.
And even getting a test is difficult. So it is good to see that the city is setting up more testing sites, as you said. Now, on Facebook, here is a question from Ray. The COVID-19 vaccines are free. Will hospitals charge for Regeneron treatments? Dr. Cowart, it's my understanding that if you are hospitalized for a number of weeks with COVID, even with insurance, you're going to have a pretty big bill, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Very much. Yeah, so, you know, there is some guarantee of coverage through federal legislation last year for people who have coronavirus. So that's why the vaccine is free of charge to people, because their insurance is paying for it. But hospitalizations The insurance may cover certain parts of it under that legislation, but other parts, you know, you're going to get a very large bill. So especially if you're in the hospital a long time, if you go to the ICU, if you're on a ventilator or high flow oxygen, you know, those bills really rack up pretty quickly. If you have insurance, you may get a big bill. If you, you know, if you have lower paying insurance or you don't have insurance, your bill, of course, be even higher. And then for the monoclonal antibodies, there is a facility charge usually for the infusions, even if you do have insurance, and you may have different copays and such. So really the cheapest way to get through all of this is to get a vaccine, which is free of charge and covered by your insurance or the government. And if you don't have insurance, you can get a vaccine for free, and also to wear a face mask, because that's a whole lot cheaper than any of the rest of it. Either the infusion of the antibodies or certainly a hospital stay, very expensive.
Exactly. Here's a tweet from Transformation Jax. The fact that we have vaccines to stop the epidemic but refuse to take them will go down in history as one of our nation's greatest tragedies. 5492937. Jeff in Springfield. Hi, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I'm actually on my way to go get a rapid test.
Oh, great.
And paying for it out of pocket. Mm-hmm. I've been vaccinated. Just wondering what the false negative rate is.
Oh, thanks for that question. Dr. Cowart, how can Jeff be confident that his test result will be accurate?
Yeah, well, thank you for going to get tested, and I hope everything is well. The rapid test can have up to 50% false negative, especially if it's early in the infection. So be sure you get a really good swab on there, you know, get lots of good stuff on there. And then if it is negative and you're still concerned or having symptoms, then I would follow it up in 1 or 2 days with a repeat test or try to get a PCR test. But I know those are they're harder to get even. So get a really good sample on there. And if you're still having symptoms in a couple of days, then I would repeat the test.
The city got city council approval. The mayor did, I should say. Millions are now being spent around town to open 5 new testing and vaccination sites. Dr. Cowart, those are desperately needed. Trying to get a free COVID test in a timely manner right now has been very difficult.
That is absolutely true. And so I'm really grateful to our city leadership who are putting together these testing sites. We also know there's a group of people out there who have not been able to get vaccinated, but it's largely related to their other socioeconomic, you know, factors. They're working all day, they're lower income, they're struggling to make ends meet, and they don't have time to take off work to go try to get a vaccine. And so I think getting those resources closer into communities and then getting people to those resources is going to be really helpful. Some people, of course, don't want to receive the vaccine, and that's a different crowd. But there are some folks out there, I think, who are reachable, who may be interested but may not know about it, may not know about the opportunities, and they may need help actually accessing it. So the more that we can get the vaccine and testing into those communities, the more people we will get in get vaccinated. Right now, fully vaccinated in the Jacksonville metro area, it looks like we're at 43.6%, and we're 53% have gotten one plus dose. So we are on the uptick, and this is good news. A lot of people started to get vaccinated in July when this started to happen, and it will, of course, take them a while to be fully vaccinated with the two-shot series of Pfizer and Moderna. And the more that we can get out there into those communities and get a hold of people and get them vaccinated, the better off we will all be.
5492937. Omar is in Springfield. Lots of Springfielders on the line today. Hi, Omar.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm in Springfield. Well, I'm in Springfield because I'm at Chance.
Oh, okay.
So, our entire household, I don't live with everyone, but we've all been vaccinated since like early this year, February, March. And I don't want to get emotional. My mother has contracted COVID. She's 72, diabetic, you know, immobile and legally blind. I mean, you know, it's not the best situation.
I'm so sorry.
She noticed the symptoms a few days ago. And then earlier, like yesterday, she was taken by ambulance to Sham. So that's why I'm in Springfield. And I hear a lot of, like, what you guys are saying. And, like, believe me, I am not someone that would – I don't science is science. I believe it. She believes it. We all believe it. Like, we understand it. But, you know, the fact that maybe one person could have done, like, you know, spread this in the house is very disturbing to me. Because this is my mama. You know, like,
I'm so sorry, Omar. What are they telling you about her condition and what they think?
Well, she's in the ICU. And, you know, like, they won't tell you but so much because that's their job. I get it. I understand HIPAA law. Really, we're more than most people. But like, at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. It's a, you know, my mother, who like, you know, oh, okay. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Look, I'm so sorry that you are sitting there in the hospital worried about your mom. I lost my mom a long time ago, and I know, Omar, I'm going to say a little prayer for your mom, and I ask everybody to do the same.
And I'm sorry, but really, like, the message I want to send is that it does not matter. Like, get vaccinated. Wear your mask. And, like, you know, if you feel sick, stay home.
Yeah.
Don't go out. You know, like, it really is something. Even for me, because, you know, I'm not perfect.
No, but you did the right thing. Your family did the right thing. And I'm so incredibly sorry that this pandemic is so bad that it's affecting even vaccinated people. And I want you to,
we did our part.
Thought that you did your part, and I want to thank you so much for calling, and I'm so sorry, and I'm going to pray for your mom. Okay.
We all will, Omar.
Dr. Cowart, you know, I just don't know what else we have to say to get people to realize how serious this is. Now, in addition to that, I want to ask you about the fact that this variant is so contagious that even fully vaccinated people like Omar's mom, who it sounded like she had some underlying health issues which might have made her more vulnerable, but even fully vaccinated people are getting sick with breakthrough cases of COVID. And that is due to the virulence of this variant. The virus keeps mutating because we have so many people who still refuse to get vaccinated. If more people had gotten vaccinated earlier, we would not be in this position now. So that really brings a concern about how much longer this is going to last and how effective vaccines might be over time. If we keep seeing these kinds of mutations, can you please share your insights on this?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think it's okay to feel angry at the whole situation. You know, that just, you'll be angry at coronavirus, right? It's an inert object. You can be angry at it. It's ruining a lot of people's lives, and I'm so sorry for Omar and his mother, and I wish her and her doctors all the best as they care for her. You know, the numbers greatly support that vaccinated people on the whole, you know, do better and don't get as sick, but there will always, unfortunately, be someone in there who, you know, who does get sick despite having the vaccine, and we will do everything we can for them, just as we would anybody coming in the hospital, regardless of what they have and whether or not they receive the vaccine. But yes, the more this virus is allowed to spread and run rampant, the more chances it has to mutate and turn nastier. You know, we already see that Delta variant is nastier than the COVID we had last year. And, you know, I know there's thoughts and worries about the next one coming, you know, the Lambda variant or other ones. And so The faster we can get everybody vaccinated and reduce the community spread, the less chance we have of this thing continuing. But, you know, it is still rampaging globally, despite, you know, what's happening here in the United States. And so we also need to be sure that our international partners are getting what they need to vaccinate in their populations as well, because we really are all in this together.
Yeah, that's the thing. But see, that's the problem. Too many people don't get that. And I have to say I'm sorry now, because we try so hard to just impartially give information to the public. But I'm angry. I'm angry that Omar is sitting there in the hospital praying and terrified that he's going to lose his mom. You know, I'm angry that so many people in this community won't get vaccinated because they don't have a sense of community and they don't understand that their actions affect others. Megan in Jacksonville. Hi, Megan. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was calling just because we just have a little one in kindergarten who we just sent, and we also have a 2.5-year-old you might be able to hear. And my husband and I are vaccinated, and we've talked to our kindergartner about keeping his mask up and wearing it, but my husband and I have had a really hard time deciding what to do with our 2.5-year-old. I stopped working full time to have, you know, both of our kids stay home with us last year. And then we did decide to send our kindergartner to school this year with his mask. And we're having the same debate. Do we send our 2.5-year-old, who has now had little to no socialization, to preschool, where they just won't keep mask on, or do we keep him home another year? And do I stay out of work for yet another year? And I haven't heard a lot of information about, you know, for parents who have kids that aren't school age, who are younger than that, like
sure,
the daycares, the preschools. Just wondering if you could offer some information about that as well.
Sure, Megan. And I'm so sorry you're in that situation. And millions of other moms are in that same situation, Dr. Cowart. They are having to quit their jobs. They are seeing their career aspirations, evaporate because they have to make these really difficult choices.
Yeah, 100%. This is one of those burdens being felt more by everyone, but even more so by women who are still predominantly the caretakers. I have a 4-year-old, so I'm in somewhat of a similar boat here. So I would say at that 2.5-year-old level, you know, it's very difficult to keep masks on a room full of 2-year-olds. What I might be thinking of doing, and of course you're going to make your own decision, is wait for this surge to be over before you make any big decisions, just because right this second we're at the height of this peak. And then when you're making that decision about whether or not to put him in the daycare, in the school for socialization, you know, find a place where you can rely on the teachers to have been vaccinated and wear their masks around the students. And then maybe you see if you can get them to start teaching the little ones how to wear their mask. I mean, they have to teach little ones how to use the potty, so, you know, and how to wash their hands. I've watched them do it with my son at daycare. All those kids now are so good at washing their hands, and it's because the teachers are wonderful and have taught them. And so, you know, over this time, we cocoon our babies by making sure that the adults around them are vaccinated. And right now, at the height of this surge, that those adults are wearing masks. And then, you know, for those kids that are 2 to 3, you know, start teaching them how to wear a mask. It's part of being a good citizen to wear their mask while they're indoors. And then, of course, they go outside. We think it's lower risk. They can take it off when they're outside. And that's how I've approached my 4-year-old. He started BPK last week. And so I am sending him in his mask. Masks are currently optional in his class because they're 4. And a lot of his friends are wearing their masks and some are not. The teachers are. And they're very good about it. All the adults coming in the building are wearing their masks. And I donated a pack of kid masks to the school, and will be happy to, if I need to, come in as a doctor and say, you know, start teaching the little ones that this is important and you should wear your mask as part of a good citizen. You know, I think that's where I landed as a family. My husband and I are both vaccinated to keep our kids safe. And thankfully, nobody in my house has major medical issues that we felt completely unsafe putting them in school. But we know that there's some risk there. There's no zero risk. And so we know that, that there is some risk there, and we're just trying to mitigate it the best we can.
That's all anyone can do. I apologize for becoming so emotional. It's just, it's really, it's difficult listening to these stories day in and day out. But, it, you know, it pales in comparison, Dr. Cowart, to what you guys are dealing with. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Jennifer Cowart, a hospitalist physician in Jacksonville and part of Doctors Fighting COVID. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And much more still ahead. Later, some sports with Josh as we recap the first Jags preseason game and the debut of QB Trevor Lawrence. That's later, but up next.
The nursing shortage and healthcare shortage has been before COVID, and COVID is now just elucidating it even more.
How JU is responding to a critical nursing shortage in this time of pandemic. That's after this. Well, a critical nursing shortage is affecting the ability of local hospitals to deal with this flood of COVID patients. Jacksonville University has been expanding its course offerings in the healthcare space for a while to meet these surging demands. For more, I spoke with JU Provost, Dr. Christine Sapienza. Dr. Sapienza, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Always appreciate being on your show.
There is a critical nursing shortage going on right now in healthcare with COVID. Tell us how JU is addressing that and your thoughts from where you sit.
Thank you, Melissa. That's a great question about the nursing shortage. And I would say that the nursing shortage and healthcare shortage has been before COVID, and COVID is now just elucidating it even more. And, you know, when I think about the sources of information where we receive that information, you have to look to the American Association of Colleges of Nursing, the Florida Center for Nursing. We're seeing it in the Wall Street Journal. It is a global crisis, as well as a particular crisis for our state. You know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is showing 1.1 million nurses are going to be needed by 2022. And for the most part, you know, if I think of the four things that are causing this issue in nursing, it revolves around retirement of nurses, people that have been in nursing for a long time, the fact that other states are paying nurses to travel and pay them at high rates to help out with COVID in other states of need, obviously the growing population of Florida that you talk about many times on your show, and that people are living longer. They're living well. We need more preventative health, and we need to do prevention all the way to palliative care. So it's really a multiple factors that are converging together to cause more of a crisis now than ever.
Yeah. You've expanded your course offerings around nursing and other healthcare spheres. So you'd been doing that anyway, right?
Right. So in nursing at Jacksonville University, we've been doing academic programming, believe it or not, since 1987. Since then, we've graduated 8,000 nurses from Jacksonville University across all different types of nurses. But to the point of your question, yes, since 2013, we really put our foot on the pedal to respond to market demand. And so in nursing in particular, we have, you know, added programs in acute care of nursing, psychiatric nursing, really expanded the family nurse practitioner program and our pre-licensure program, which is really defined as nurses who are now coming back to school to get the Bachelor's of Science in nursing, which gives them more clinical experience as well as more theoretical nursing experience. And so we've seen growth really since 2014 be close to 50% jump in our enrollment just in nursing But to add to that, Melissa, is also our responsivity in other areas of healthcare. Most recently, we are adopting a new program, a graduate program called the Masters of Respiratory Care. So to your point about COVID, another area that is really going to be on the forefront is dealing with post-COVID patients. Respiratory care is going to be critical inside the hospital for obviously working with individuals on ventilators, but then all the post-COVID issues that occur with breathing and lung fibrosis and airway fibrosis. So we at Jacksonville University, our graduate program growth in healthcare since 2013, believe it or not, across nursing and our School of Applied Health Sciences has been about 1,000%.
Wow. So coming out of this pandemic, healthcare and higher education, it could be completely transformed in some respects, right? Is that fair to say?
Yes, transform is a great word. I think it has to. There's an issue, you know, while we have over 60 schools, academic programs in Florida working to build healthcare professionals and particularly nursing, there has to be a way to transform how we educate, because if you build too many schools and you try to enroll too many nurses, the burden occurs on the hospital systems because ultimately they're involved in the training of these nurses on their floors. So primarily in our great partnership with Baptist, we have been incorporating more simulation for some of the primary assessment and treatments that nurses have to learn, and we have a large 30,000 square foot, you know, community simulation center that we do those simulations in, so we can build skills. More telehealth, utilizing telehealth robotics and telehealth training, because that's the wave of the future, Melissa, is there's more and more care going to be happening in the home. We've got to educate caregivers. And so we need a lot more attention to the different types of nurses and the different types of modalities to teach, you know, not only the students, but then also ultimately the patients and their caregivers on how to care for themselves. So it really is going to move away from what people, you know, would view as the traditional, you know, lecturer student in a classroom. So transform is a perfect word.
We will continue to touch base with you on this. In the meantime, thank you, Dr. Christine Sapienza, Provost at Jacksonville University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, another new restaurant is opening this week. Here's some good news. The Bread and Board and its specialty marketplace, Bread and Board Provisions, are both expanding their footprint into downtown Jacks. Dwayne Beliakoff is co-owner and chef at the Bread and Board. He's on the line with the tasty news. Hey, Dwayne.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, and congratulations. So tell us about the downtown Bread and Board opening up later this week.
We are shooting for Wednesday or Thursday of this week, and we all have, know how that goes.
Yeah.
Our crew is downstairs. I'm upstairs at Australia right now, and the crew is busy downstairs getting the kitchen prepped and ready and the marketplace full of all its goodies. And super excited. It's kind of our third and final this year, and certainly largest and the one we've been working on the longest. So we're really excited to bring it downtown.
And tell us what drove your decision to open up downtown and move from the Five Points location where you had gotten started, and you've got other locations now around the community, but why downtown?
Kind of two separate decisions. We made the decision to come downtown now almost 2 years ago. In fact, it'll be a little over 2 years by the time we open it. We were approached by the family of folks over here at Bistar to kind of conceptualize what a marketplace and restaurant would look at. And we went to task on that and made a solid plan. And then Five Points, the decision there was really based on the fact that we came to a natural breakpoint with the lease. It was up, and given the proximity to the downtown location, less than a mile away venue to venue, really had to sit on that a bit and decide where to focus the greatest amount of energy. And, you know, given the current workforce situation and the fact that I have such a talented team at my locations, it made very good sense for me to kind of consolidate the efforts downtown.
Now, in addition to the restaurant, which has a great menu, and I love your food, you know, the sandwich boards that you guys do, the salads, entrees, you're also opening up Bread and Board Provisions, which is a specialty marketplace, and it's got some interesting stuff, too. Tell us what you'll be offering there.
Yeah, this is a really exciting one for us. The team's been busy for months on end conceptualizing, and really there's no end to the types of grab-and-go that we can and will create. So we've got a really large footprint, nearly 3,000 square feet of marketplace, and in it will include all of our specialty items that people have kind of come to love, our specialty pasta salads and fruits and vegetable salads. But we're really expanding to do kind of lifestyle bowls to go, incorporating a lot of vegan dishes this time around. We are also partnering with tons of local artisan purveyors and vendors, both from farmers all the way to honey makers to we've got Kelly and Jamie from Alewife opening their second version of Alewife bottle shop right within our store for grab and go and mix and match beer. Martin Coffee, Good Dough Donuts has an outpost and will be selling donuts with us every morning as well. So we're really kind of trying to represent the best of Jacksonville. And that, again, as that grows, we hope to incorporate even more and more partners to the market.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list at your marketplace and you've got Alewife, Bee Friends Farm, Prati Italia, Congorean Pen, Good Dough, as you mentioned, Martin Coffee, Trader's Hill Farm, Wainwright Dairy. These are all local artisans and growers. So not only can people come to the restaurant, they can stop in the marketplace and support all of the local makers, which is so cool. Now, you're opening up on Bay Street in the ViStar building. So for people that have never come downtown for lunch, this is an opportunity for them to shake up their routine, Duane.
Absolutely. So we are the entire ground floor, the Bloor Street side and Bay Street side of 100 West Bay, where the profit building used to be and now owned by ViStar. We are a block away from the new Riverfront Plaza that will be under development. So the marketplace for us is a great lunch and dinner option, whether you're a guest at a hotel downtown or you work downtown or coming in on the weekends to explore. If you don't want to commit to having lunch or dinner at the restaurant, you can grab and literally take back to your desk or out to the park and enjoy the river views. So many different options, but that's really where the marketplace concept was born, was just that we wanted to be able to to get our foods and, of course, the foods and the products of our friends in the community out to folks if they weren't coming specifically for a Bread and Board experience.
And almost out of time, Duane, but are you still hiring? Of course, restaurants are looking for workers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the only thing that will impact, is some revised hours here and there as we get the doors open. It won't stop us by any means, but we welcome resumes from food and beverage professionals or people wanting to just get into it for the first time. We've got a great training program and a good time to jump on board with us.
Check it out, the Bread and Board and their specialty marketplace opening later this week in the ViStar building downtown on Bay Street. Chef and co-owner Duane Beliakoff making moves here in Jacksonville. Thanks so much, Duane, and we really look forward to checking it out.
Can't wait to see you down here, Melissa. Thanks.
Oh, we'll be there. And still to come, a look at the Jaguars' first preseason game. How did Trevor Lawrence do? Our own Josh Torres has some sports news and notes after this.
Mayo Clinic. If you're looking for answers no one else has been able to find, and it's time to get some certainty once and for all, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. More at mayoclinic.org/Florida. St. Johns County Cultural Events Division presents Sing Out Loud Festival in St. Augustine, September 10th through 26th. Over 100 performances, including TLC, Parquet Courts, Yola, Patty Griffin, and May Day Parade. Info at singoutloudfestival.com.
What's old is new again. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, photographer Shane Balkowicz uses the wet plate process, popular in the mid-19th century, to capture images of Seminoles and other Native Americans. We'll discuss American Beach in the Jim Crow era and bell towers. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Scott Tong. Paralympic gold medalist David Brown is headed to Tokyo. The visually impaired runner will compete for Team USA alongside his guide runner. But the road wasn't an easy one.
I didn't learn how to run straight, really, until last year. So if you're not running in a straight line, that can take all time. If I'm running in, if I'm running out, if I'm going left, that all plays a factor.
Next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Katie's a healthcare worker in Tennessee who's vaccinated, but she's working with those who aren't.
I personally know two nurses who chose not to be vaccinated.
As of June, 96% of practicing physicians have gotten the shot, but less than half of nurses and aides have done the same. Why? We'll find out next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the Jaguars had their first preseason game Saturday night. Our sports director, Josh Torres, has an update on how the team did, particularly new quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Melissa.
So, first game back at full capacity. They had a pretty packed house over there at the bank.
Oh, yes, they did. And as somebody who has lived in Jax for almost his entire life, I have never seen so many people show up just for a preseason game, especially against the Cleveland Browns. I apologize, Cleveland fans. It was something I was not expecting. The Jags had an announced attendance of 57,508. Now, that is how many tickets they sold, and unfortunately, it did rain for most of the day Saturday, so not that many people probably actually showed up to the game, but still, there was at least over 30,000 people who showed up for the Jags to play the Browns, and it was the debut of the number one overall pick, Trevor Lawrence, and unfortunately, it could not have started off worse for him.
I know.
His very first play, he was sacked and fumbled the ball on the play, but was able to recover it before it got into the hands of the defenders. Overall, in my opinion, I apologize, Jags fans. It was a decent start. Nothing insane. Again, this is his first start in the NFL, so there's no alarm bells ringing just yet. Even himself, he was first to admit, I had some good things and I had some bad things. He's going to be learning. He finished 6-for-9 for 71 yards. One of the things I think we all really noticed is there were certain plays where he really held on to the ball for a little too long, especially going against the NFL defense. You are not going to be able to hold on to the ball that long to find a play. He's really got to, when he sees the play develop, he's really got to be quick about his decisions, which is something that he's very actually well known for. So it's definitely going to take a lot of practice and coaching from head coach Urban Meyer. One of the big notes, though, is the offensive line definitely did not look great. They gave up 4 sacks on the during the entire game and just really had moments where they didn't look great. One of the highlights I do have, I actually have 2 highlights, would be C.J. Henderson. This guy, for a little bit, a lot of people had questions about him. He missed time because he was on the COVID-19 list and then missed a few more days of training camp due to personal reasons. Finally came back, looked a little shaky his first couple days back, but, you know, on Saturday he actually really stepped up, and I was really happy to see that. This is a guy that we've really been waiting for him to really come out of his shell and really show us why we picked him in the first round, and he actually really impressed and really, really looked good. And then backup quarterback C.J. Beathard, he played amazing, threw for over 100 yards, threw a touchdown pass, and I got to say, Gardner Minshew, as much as we all love the man with the stash, he might be looking over his shoulder now.
Yeah, I think so.
He only was 4-for-8 with 47 yards and threw an interception, and also, if I remember correctly, had a fumble of his own. So definitely did not look good, and especially with a guy who is considered the third string is outperforming you like that, you're going to be looking over your shoulder. And unfortunately, the Jags did end up losing the game 23-13. Taven Austin caught a touchdown from C.J. Beathard, and Tyler Davis also caught a touchdown pass from fourth-string quarterback Jake Luton. And then we also got to see Tim Tebow finally show up for his first game as a tight end. He was celebrating his 34th birthday on Saturday.
So much star power in this game.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy.
I was writing my notes for this game yesterday, and there's more I could have written. But Tebow played about 16 snaps. Definitely looked okay, but also really did have times when he looked out of place. I mean, there's a viral clip of him go online where he went for a block and just absolutely muffed it. I mean, he completely missed it. Guy got around him. And he didn't have any catches, had a target, but Taven Austin actually stepped in front of it just before it got to Tebow's hand, so he didn't catch it, and also almost had a pass. Another caught pass, but a tip pass from the line, but did not get any receptions. And he was also the only tight end who did not get any special teams time, which is definitely something that kind of glares out, because if he's going to make the roster, he's also got to be getting into some special teams, because he's already down as far down as the fourth listed tight end. So if he really wants to make the roster as a active member or on the practice squad, he's definitely going to have to start stepping up.
And to that end, you know, they always say the NFL stands for not for long.
Oh, yeah.
So the cuts start tomorrow, correct?
Yep. The first sets of cuts are going to start tomorrow. They're going to only cut 5 players. It's going to trim the roster from 90 down to 85 before the team is going to travel to New Orleans to play the Saints next Monday night. And then the next day after that is going to be another 5 cuts to get down to 80 before the final roster is 53 is set on August 31st. And the team will also welcome back Taven Bryan, who was finally activated off the COVID list. So it's going to be good to see him back.
Okay, let's go Jags. Let's hope for a good season with all of the talent they have this year. Let's talk quickly about the Icemen and their second ever franchise head coach, Nick Lucco. Tell us about the Icemen.
Yep, Nick Lucco was announced as the newest head coach after Jason Christie left to join the Buffalo Sabres up in the NHL as an assistant coach. Lucco spent time with the Reading Royals for 2019-2020 after the Royals decided not to play during the 2021 season. And when he was their assistant coach, he helped them to a 37-17-6 record, and he's also a former player with the Royals as a defenseman, where he played for 4 seasons, scoring 87 points, and also served as their team captain in 2018-19, and he will also serve the role of director of hockey operations.
Follow Josh on Twitter at Josh is a Polar Bear for more sports news and notes, and thanks so much.
Absolutely, Melissa.
Josh is also our show director, driving this bus every day. Thanks to him and producers Heather Schatz and Catherine Hobbs. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Mask up and get a vaccine.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.